recently, for the last 20 minutes, is the infamous and well-spoken, rough-tongued Roxanne Akistapache. Hey, Roxanne.
Good morning, Robert.
All right. Good morning. Are you, I know you are kind of been tapping your foot, impatient with all these tapes and then this questionable call I had. And you were actually scheduled to start at 10. I want to apologize to listeners who have been listening and tapping their feet.
And I was here at 10:05.
10:05. That's what happens when you get here late.
And had to listen endlessly.
Preempted by the tapes. Actually, we also got a call around 10 o'clock from Orly and Stacy. Maybe you can give a, you can start sweeping in with the info.
Yeah, Stacy and Orly, call us. You know, the reason I'm on today is because one of my advocacy cases has taken a nasty turn. And it's taken not only a turn for the worse for the parents, but for the children. Four of Stacy and Orly's children have been abused in foster care. The two boys were with a single male foster parent.
Before you get into that, can you kind of brief us on how they got into foster care and how does this relate to homeless people here? Because that's really our focus. Is that okay? I'm sorry.
I'll finish what I'm saying.
Sure.
And
maybe step back after that.
Yeah. Anyway, three of their four children have been abused in foster care and have experienced a failure to protect. When they went into foster care, they had not one mark on them, nor was there any proof. There was just an allegation by someone on the CPS phone that they felt the children were abused and a number of other things. One of the boys has been had a foster father's hands around his neck because he made him mad, with the other son being shoved down to the floor. The three-year-old girl has a handprint across her rear end and finger marks across her thighs. I'm going to backtrack and just let you know that Stacy and Orly, for those of you that never heard, they're not homeless per se. They have a large RV-type vehicle.
Excuse me, Roxanne, did you see these marks yourself?
No, the mother and the father did. And also, they were not allowed to talk about it with their children. When their children brought it up, the supervising social worker told them that if they talked about it anymore, that she would terminate the visit immediately. And those children were forced to spend the night in the house where the foster father abused them one more night because the social worker did nothing. It was not until they talked to their counselor the next day that the counselor held them in custody and refused to send them back to the foster father. But the county was very happy to do that. Now, I will tell you that those parents would be in jail if they had done to those kids what's happened to them in the foster home. Also, the little girl was bitten in the back, in the center of the back, with every tooth mark visible, a very deep bite mark. And when the parents inquired about it, they were told that the foster mother says she does it to herself, if you can believe that.
She's a contortionist and bites her own back.
Yeah. Hmm. So, anyway, Stacy and Orly have an RV. They're looking for an apartment to satisfy the county. So if there's anybody out there that's willing to rent to someone with four children, they have the money, but some landlords find four children daunting. Anyway, the reason that I came on today is because these children have no rights in foster care. When they speak up, the social workers say they're lying. There's such a premium on foster parents that foster parents do not have the same accountability as parents. When Stacy and Orly were told by their sons what had happened to them, they asked the sheriff's office that night. They could not get in touch with their children by phone. They called until 10 o'clock that night, and there was no answer on the phone. There was no answering machine. There was nothing. When they called to ask for a well child check from the Monterey County Sheriff's, Watsonville Sheriff's, Watsonville Police, and Monterey County Police, they refused to go as soon as they found out it was a foster home. They said, well, that's up to CPS. So in other words, this agency has carte blanche. And when they have poor choice of foster parents, they don't. To my knowledge, that foster parent has never been prosecuted.
Can you give us a little of the history of this case? I mean, when were the children taken? Why did that happen?
The children were taken in April.
There were four children.
There were four children.
Their
and
ages are...
and the baby is actually just 1 month from adoption. In other words, if they do not give that baby back, they can adopt that child out. She's three. And she's very desirable as an adoptive child, you know, because of her youth. I think when Stacy and Orly call in, that you can ask them for the ages of their children, because I don't remember exactly. And they can give you more of those parental particulars.
This began in April. In their vehicle, right?
Yes. Yeah. Someone at New Brighton Beach, I believe, made a complaint about them, just maliciously, and it has turned their lives upside down. The thing that I'm most concerned about is that we went to court on June 14th. At that time, the judge ordered family reunification. They were assured the baby would be home in a week, and the rest of the children within a couple weeks. And then the minute they got out of that courtroom, everything has changed. The whole system is geared to talking about family reunification, but actually splitting up families. And that is a problem I really have. Right now, Stacy has a counselor that feels that she should split up with Orly. She doesn't like Orly. The counselor doesn't like Orly. The counselor often is like God in these cases, because she tells the court whether she thinks the baby should go home. And when your counselor doesn't like you or doesn't like your husband or feels in her gut that you're an abused woman, she has no proof of it, and there's never been any charges wherever they've lived. When she just feels it, and she's so intuitive, she just feels that she can't get you to admit it. So she tells CPS and the court that she believes that you are abused. And they actually believe it, because she's like some sort of expert witness. Now, Stacy has requested another counselor over and over again, because this woman is so hostile to her. On the other hand, Orly's counselor likes him very much and doesn't feel the same about the situation, is not advocating the marriage breaking up. You know, it's all a matter of opinion. Everything's a matter of opinion. But the county is paying Stacy's counselor, and they won't let her change.
Opinion and power, it sounds like.
It is. And things have gotten really freaky for these people when they go to counseling. I mean, Stacy particularly, the woman has repeatedly told the court she doesn't believe it's safe for the children to go home, even though the children are being abused, have marks all over them in foster care. She somehow thinks that's safer, and when they came, they were whole children. They've been described as traumatized. Their behavior's changed since they've been in foster care, but they still keep these children out of their home and away from their parents. The three-year-old is seeing her parents once a week for 2 hours, and has, since April, that's the only contact she's had with them. She's turning into a wild animal in foster care. They can't control her. She's so upset all the time. And the thing that happens when a child's that young is when they see their mom and their dad, a lot of times they act out really badly afterwards when mom and dad go away, because they miss them so much. They're so traumatized by not being with them. So that's used against you, like, well, we don't really want her to see her parents because she's worse after she sees them. But it's normal.
How much of this have you actually seen? Have you been in prison for any of these visits? Have you seen the kids yourself?
No, I have not.
So these are all reports from Orly and Stacy?
That's right. And they've reported it to the social workers also. And
mm-hmm. Looks like we may have Orly and Stacy calling in.
That would be great.
Here's some earphones, or you can hear it on the monitor. Let's see what we got here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. This is Orly Jones.
Hey, Orly. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I think we can hear you. We got in the studio with us Roxanne Aquista-Pache. And Roxanne, the service you work with again is called?
Independent Advocacy.
And can you hear Roxanne?
Yeah, it's kind of barely. There we go. I can hear you better now, probably.
All right. Roxanne, say something so see if we can
hear you. Orly, can you hear me all right?
No, not really.
Can't hear. Okay. What we may want to do is share the good mic. I've had this problem with mics before. I'm going to see if you can hear.
So have I been talking to nothing?
No. You've been doing fine. Why don't you, can you come a little closer, Roxanne? We're going to do a little moving around the studio here, Orly. So, Orly, you're with Stacy, or you're on your lonesome over there? What's happening?
No, that's me and her both.
Okay,
No, I still can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, a little better.
Okay. All right, we're gonna try to share the mic here. Let's see. We have mic problems here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Which is better, this or this?
The first one.
This?
Yes.
This is better. Your mic is better. There you go. So I'm going to talk real loud, and Roxanne, just kiss the mic, and we're going to talk.
Orly, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
So Orly, we were just talking about, I was asking, how did this whole thing start? I know you've talked about it on the radio before, and it's probably a pain in the ass to have to keep going through it, but can you tell us a little bit about your background and what catastrophe befell you in April of this year?
A little bit about my background. I'm a construction worker. I do commercial TIs and setups, and I lost a job in Kentucky basically because they found out that I smoked marijuana, which I have a prescription for, where I have glaucoma and also have a few back problems. And I decided to come to California because of legal marijuana. And we got here March 16th, and we was here. We got the kids signed up in school, and got a hold of everybody, you know, that could help us locate an apartment and all that, signed up for Section 8. And April 10th, CPS swooped in on us.
Now, you were living in a vehicle?
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, you were living in a vehicle, or?
Yeah, we're living in a motorhome.
Were you living in squalid conditions with, were there complaints about overrunning toilets and screams of abuse and all that? What you think?
No, never.
Right, I'm giving you the devil's advocate approach, but I'm, you know.
Right, yeah.
I thought we weren't going to do that today, Robert.
We got into anything. I mean, we'd set the kids up in school, and you know, we were staying in state parks, which to me, I found that was a big mistake.
Go ahead, Orly. Tell us what happened, why it was a big mistake, and how CPS intervened.
Well, we ran into a guy, and he was acting like he was our friend, and he started trying to get friendly with my little 8-year-old girl, and I kind of dismissed him, you know, told him I didn't want anything to do with him. Plus, he was also trying to get me to share my medication with him, which I don't do. And when we done that, he called into CPS and told all kinds of nasty stuff that wasn't true, saying that I smoked pot in front of my children, which I don't do. I always go outside or go somewhere else and do it. And, you know, my wife don't even like it. She don't like the smell of it, so I don't do it around her. I don't do it around the kids. And when he called in and made all these allegations, CPS swooped in and took my children. And
these are four children we're talking about.
Right.
And how old are they?
I got a 12-year-old son, a 10-year-old son, an 8-year-old daughter, and a 3-year-old daughter.
You think Stacy wants to say something at this point?
Yeah, she's right there.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Stacy, you were present when the CPS did what? A worker showed up and just said, "We're taking these four children." What happened?
They came and they really didn't give us any papers or anything. They just came and said they was taking the kids from us. And we asked them why, and they says, "Well, you'll get the papers when you go to court." And they really didn't say exactly why they was taking them. They just took them, and then when we went to court and stuff the Tuesday, they gave us all these allegations that wasn't even true.
What were the allegations?
They just keep giving us a runaround, and our youngest one is only 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And what they wanted is they want to adopt her out, because we found out that if your child is 3 years old and under in foster care, they can get money off your kids to adopt them out.
Roxanne, any comment on that about the money that CPS can get?
Right.
Where do they get it from?
Every kid is worth $6,600 from the federal government as of Clinton's new adoption law, which I think went into effect 3 years ago. And it was meant to so that children didn't languish in foster care. but it has backfired and become an income-producing vehicle for the state. The first year of Clinton's new law, the state earned $38 million off of children just by adopting them out. So one of the things I want to say, although I know you kind of want to go back into the history for the people that haven't been there, is that there have been so many improprieties in this case that are recent that I want us not to run out of time, because the things that are happening to Stacy and Orly now, when their children should be back home, when they should be having unsupervised visits, overnight visits, when it's only a month away from their child being adoptable, nothing's happening. And what I found in talking to Stacy and Orly, Orly's working full-time. This is a person with fused discs, bulging vertebrae, glaucoma, all kinds of things. He could be on SSI. He wants to work. He's a working man. He's working full-time. They're apartment hunting, and CPS is saying that they see no progress.
I've even completed parenting classes, and almost
right.
I even went in on counseling on my own, and I almost have that completed even.
Also, when they left court, they were supposed to get a new case plan. No one has ever drawn up a case plan for them. They keep telling them, oh, don't worry. We'll just have you sign the old one and cross the things out that the judge said you didn't have to do. It's making them so paranoid because their baby is so close to that six-month time that Orly's saying, well, maybe I will go take anger management classes. Maybe I'll do this, maybe I'll do that, even though the court hasn't ordered him, because he's so afraid that at the last minute they're going to be handed this case plan that things have been changed on. I mean, these people are constantly in hell trying to figure out CPS's next step.
Is that... What's your reaction to that, Orly, Stacy?
She can be more right, you know. The way I feel about it is they gave me a drug assessment, which I am dyslexic, and I can't read real well.
A written drug assessment.
But I can't read real well, and I can't spell worth a crap, you know. And they gave me a handwritten assessment, and it came back that I was an alcoholic, and I don't even drink. I mean, I did drink one beer Friday night because a friend asked me to go into a bar and drink, you know, have a drink. I drank one beer and I walked away. You know, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't drink. All I do is use prescribed medications. And this lady that gave me the assessment, Sharon Brackett, says, oh, sir, I think you're an alcoholic, you know, and you need to go into inpatient treatment. I'm just not willing to do that, you know, because I'm not an alcoholic and I don't have a drug problem. I just use medications, you know, for my needs. There's a lot of difference there. My question is marijuana really legal for medication in this state or not? You know,
not according to the feds, of course. But
yeah,
what about that, Roxanne? Should he get a second evaluation from someone that's saying he's not an out? You got
he
a second?
Has.
I've had three of them.
Wow.
The other two came back low probability of any problems.
And yet, this first evaluation is somehow the ruling evaluation.
That's the way they're acting. But the judge told them to dismiss the first one and have me take another one. Well, I took another one on my own with a counselor at a different place other than where CPS wants me to go to, because those people that CPS wants me to go to work for them, you know, and to me they're working against me to keep my children. The counselor that I went to, she's a real great lady. She's at the Phoenix Counseling Services downtown Watsonville, and you know, they're great there. And she sympathizes with me on what they're doing to me. And I also took another one with a lady that works for Prop 10, Brianna. I can't remember her last name. But it came back low probability. You know, I took medications that I brought from Kentucky that was 3 and 4 months old that should have been gone months ago that I still had, because I don't take pain pills unless I'm really in pain, because a guy told me a long time ago something that finally hit and sunk in my head, you know. He says, when you're eating those pain pills and you go to work, you can really hurt yourself because you don't know how bad you're hurting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that made sense to me, and it finally sunk in. So I don't do pain pills while I work, you know, and stuff.
And what kind of work have you been doing while you've been here?
I do commercial TIs. We went in and demoed some walls the other day and put walls back up, and, you know, I do drop ceilings and you know, basically just a commercial or residential remodel is basically what I do.
How many hours a day do you work?
I work 8 hours a day.
And that's usually, what, 40 hours a week? Or?
I've been pushing 48 to 50. The people that I'm working with is getting me work on the side. I'm working for other people.
Now, you're still living in a vehicle because you've been having trouble finding what accommodations in the Santa Cruz area for
family
of six,
right?
Well,
we got signed up on Families in Transition, but the guy on Families in Transition wants us to get a two-bedroom apartment with four kids. And everybody that we apply for an apartment with, you know, says, well, that's too many people for this apartment, you know, which I understand really it is, you know, but we could survive in it if we had to. If there's anybody out there that has a house that needs remodeled, you know, call me and make me a deal on rent, you know, and I'll go in and remodel a house for you. I can do it from the ground. I can build you a house from the ground up if that's what you want.
Got a number that people can call that you want to give out?
724-7815.
724-7815?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're talking with Orly Jones, and the studio is Roxana Keys Tapache. Stacy Jones is also on the line. Is that right, Stacy?
Yeah.
Okay. And this is a family whose four children, count them, four children are currently in the clutches of CPS, and one of them is less than a month away from being permanently adopted out after you were assured by what, the authorities, the judge, or the CPS authorities that your kids were coming back to you shortly, right?
Right, yeah. The judge granted reunification, and this has been back June 12th, and the visits that they had missed before that court hearing, the CPS was supposed to make up, and so far, as of yet, you know, we're going on 3 months later almost, and they haven't made no visits up. To me, CPS is in contempt of court in just about everything the man told them to do.
One thing before we get off the drug issue, one thing that I find very disturbing is that not only does Orly have a prescription for his medical marijuana, but everything that he takes is prescribed by an MD.
Yeah.
Child Protective Service.
I can pass a drug test, you know, and everything that you're going to find in me is prescribed. I don't do any street drugs. I don't mess with anything. Don't want anything.
The point that I want to make, though, is they do not approve of the drug program for pain that he is on by his own doctor. Not only are they above the law in everything else, they're also quite knowledgeable about prescription medicine. I mean, there's nothing that this man does all of it is supervised, all of it is legally prescribed. You know, they just decide that they don't like what he's on and that they don't think he should have kids. I don't really understand how they're just so darn educated and smart.
Me either, you know, because basically I left my home in Ohio because my ex-wife, she turned to a life of crime and hard drugs. She sicked CPS in Ohio on me, and I owned my home and had the deed to it then. And, you know, she sicked them on me to fix the house up, and she wouldn't pay any support, so therefore she made me lose my home, you know, and she went to prison, and she's sitting in there blaming me because I finally pressed charges for non-support. And she landed in jail on that because of dirty urine. They put her on probation. She got dirty urine. And then after that, she caught three charges for accessory to armed robbery and landed in prison. She blames me for her being there, and CPS contacts her and asks her about me. Well, she painted a picture of me being a monster, you know, so now they're saying I'm a violent person, but I'm 40 years old, and I've never had a violent charge in my life, you know. I've barely had any charges, you know. I've gotten in trouble here and there, but nothing ever really serious.
Orly, have any of the allegations that your ex-wife made been raised in this case?
Been what? Raised up?
Has anyone, you know, has the court or the CPS said that your wife's allegations are relevant at all? I mean, have you been accused of any of those things?
They're trying to paint a picture of me as being a monster or, you know, what would you call it?
Having a violent temper.
Yeah, having a violent temper, but, you know.
Is this all based simply on her say-so, or are there other things that they're being?
Yeah, and I've even talked to him, because I've been with this man for going on 6 years, and he's never raised a hand or anything to me, and they're saying I'm defending him and lying for him.
Now, that's what your counselor is telling you, Stacy?
Yeah.
Now, you're under some pressure from your counselor.
Yeah.
And you want to change your counselor.
Yeah, I've asked, when we first had the case, Sylvia Hernandez was the investigator, and I asked her for a different counselor, and she said no. And I've been having to go with her, and then I've asked a new social worker for a new one, and he keeps saying no.
Yeah.
And stuff, and she's got a problem with Orly because of that first assessment he's done and stuff, and every week I go in there, she's constantly bad-mouthing my husband and stuff, and, I mean, it's getting unbearable.
Now, what is the name of this counselor?
Joy. I'm not sure what her last name is. They're at the parent center.
Ask her last name next time you see her.
You know, this has gotten, like, so ridiculous. Stacy took a tape recorder and decided that her counselor is so inappropriate that she wanted to tape it. But she asked the counselor, could she tape it? The counselor said, no, you cannot tape this. I cannot let you. And so at that, I believe it was at that same appointment, the counselor began asking Stacy intimate questions about her sex life, how many orgasms she has a week, what position she likes best, all kinds of really invasive questions, and Stacy refused to answer.
Is this true, Stacy?
Yeah.
And I'm saying it because I think it's hard for Stacy to say. That's the only reason I'm jumping in and saying this.
Yeah,
part.
You should have seen her face when you started talking about it.
I know. Stacy, I'm sorry if I'm embarrassing you, but I think people should know just the kind of people that you're having to deal with.
Yeah.
So the woman knew that she wasn't taping it. I think she became even more outrageous. And then when Stacy said, look, that's between my husband and I don't even know on what grounds this has anything to do with my children or me. This was the excuse given to her. This one just makes me crack up. If you can't talk to me about sex graphically, how are you going to tell your children about sex?
Did she say that, Stacy?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to be telling your children when the time comes to tell them about the birds and bees, positions, this, that. I mean, any parent who's ever talked to their children about sex, you usually start off pretty, you know, basic.
Yeah.
And then they come to you for advice about different things, but I found this so horrendous, knowing, I believe she knew that Stacy, and so what it does is it's like her word against Stacy's. When Stacy says this stuff, she can make it look like she's crazy, like it never happened, because there's no proof.
Right.
You know, I would, of course, Ian, I'm not under the kinds of pressures you two are under. I often carry a tape recorder because I think it's important to document. And often police will tell you to turn off the recorder, and I just say no. You know, you don't even ask permission. You know, you just, unless there's an expectation of privacy, like there's a confidential relationship, and I suppose they might claim that. But really, it's up to you. You're the person who's the client. Therefore, you make the choice as to whether you want to record it or whether you don't want to record it.
Exactly. That was my thought.
And many counselors do record sessions without you knowing it.
So, I mean, my suggestion to you is simply record the next time that happens.
Yeah, we plan to.
You know, do so surreptitiously if necessary. I generally do it openly. But and again,
well, the question
they ought to ask themselves is
how many have I recorded in the past?
But remember,
recorded in the past?
Sorry?
I said maybe they should ask themselves if maybe I haven't already recorded something in the past.
Yeah, that would be good. I think when I offer this advice, I do so, I've got to say, out of ignorance. I don't know what the consequences, whether, they could then walk into court and say, oh, ho, you see how irresponsible and criminal they are? They're making recordings or something.
They would do that anyway.
Yeah, and they'll probably do that anyway. But you might want to check with some kind of, you need some sort of, it sounds like independent legal advice. And that's the next question I have. You apparently not just have been involved with, I saw this battery of CPS counselors, a lawyer for the children. There's this whole crew of paid hacks that comes running into court when these cases came up. I'm not sure if I was there for your case or somebody else's case. I think it was somebody else's case back in March. And it was also, this is Judge Yant's court we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he actually, initially he let me come into one of these cases when Chaya was involved. I was allowed to be present. And when everyone else was barred, then he said that he was concerned because the other people objected to my being there, even though Chaya, the mother of the child who was taken away from her, wanted me to be there. What kind of circumstances are you finding? Is Roxanne allowed to be in court with you?
So far, they haven't let anybody in the courtroom with us, just me and my wife.
So that isolates you. So you are alone in the court with this battery of lawyers on the other side, lawyers and social workers that the judge apparently defers to. Is that true?
Yeah.
There are, if you want to know how many people there are in the courtroom surrounding these people who have no one, there is the county's lawyers for county council. There is the county court workers who are social workers but not lawyers who have the records and are there in court. I'm not even sure what their position is. There is their lawyer, the baby's lawyer. Each of them have a lawyer. The baby has a lawyer. I mean, they're just completely surrounded as a couple. If that isn't intimidating, and they're not allowed to speak. The last time that they were at court, their children had been abused the night previous. They wanted the judge to know. Their lawyer refused to say anything. When the judge said, I guess from what I heard, there was quite a bit of tension in the court because the parents were so worried about their kids. And the judge said, is there anything else I should know about this case? The caseworker from the county said, no. Their lawyer said, no. So to this day, the judge does not know, although we are going to rectify that immediately, that their children have been abused in child care. And I also want to say another thing because there's so much to this case. The children were being abused before it was reported. Their foster father races motorcycles, and they were taken to Idaho. They were taken to Oregon to motorcycle races and then left unsupervised while he was racing motorcycles. Now, anybody could have walked off with those kids. They don't know where they are anyway. They're in California when they have been living in Kentucky. So now they're in Oregon, or they're in Idaho for, you know, 3 or 4 days at a time. And they don't know who to call for help. They don't have any power. They don't have any say. They were being neglected and abused long before that. They were left outside a youth center and not picked up on time and left out in the dark in Monterey County. These are kids that are used to being supervised. They actually have parental structure. And all of a sudden, they're just told to walk here, go there, you know, I'll be there. And they were scared. They've been scared the whole time they've been in foster care.
So where do these accounts come from? Are these accounts directly from your children, Orly, Stacy?
My boys told us about the races, you know, and that was the first time we went to court. What was that, in May?
Yeah.
And I told the judge, because the judge noticed that I wanted to say something, and he asked me what I had to say, and I told him what the man was doing with, taking him out of state, you know, leaving him standing in amongst the public while he was racing his motorcycles. I got cut off then, and the judge asked CPS, was it true? And CPS's lawyer just dismissed it by saying, oh, you know, this is a good foster parent, you know, blah, 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 and dismissed it, basically. I was trying to warn the judge, and it was probably 3 or 4 weeks later when they brought my children to the youth center. It was here in Watsonville, and left them stand and told them they'd be back to pick them up. Well, the youth center closed, and my boys were standing outside for about 45 minutes by themselves, and they decided to walk across the street to the library. Well, when they finally got there to pick them up, the lady, which was the foster parent's daughter-in-law, got really disgusted that they had walked across the street because she had trouble finding them. Well, when they got back to the foster parent's house, the foster parent grabs my 12-year-old by the throat and chokes him, and my 10-year-old told him to leave my brother alone, and he grabs him and throws him to the ground. You know, this is my understanding of what happened. And
this is an account from both the kids?
Yes, that came from both the kids in a visit the very next day after it happened, which was a day before we went to court, this last time in June 12th. And that's when, you know, they told the judge that there was nothing else that he needed to know because there was so much tension in the courtroom because I was jumping up and down telling him, hey, you're going to do something. You're going to get my kids out of this man's house. I want them back home. Well, they pulled the kids out of that house that day. The kids' counselor went and talked to them, and when he found out what happened, he kept them from that foster parent, and they placed them in another foster house that night.
But the thing is when the kids told us in the visit what happened, because they told the lady that was supervising the visits, and she called up to Sylvia Hernandez, the head social worker we had at the time, and Sylvia told Maribel that we were supposed to quit talking about it and tell the kids that they were supposed to contact their attorney. But they wouldn't do nothing about it that day.
Can you imagine these young boys are told to contact their attorneys?
Yeah.
They cannot look to anyone for protection. Their parents aren't allowed to protect them. The county is abusing them. And they're supposed to get permission from the foster father who choked them to call their attorney and tell them about it.
Yeah.
Their attorney. This is an attorney they don't know. They've met, what, once in court who didn't seem to be defending their interests in that situation.
No. They totally lied about the whole situation. I mean, they said my children didn't want to come home and all kinds of stuff, which is a total lie. I welcome anybody to talk to my children and ask them, do they want to come home? And they're all going to tell you yes. You know, and CPS is just trying to lie about the whole situation.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. We're also broadcasting on www.freakradio.org in case you're out of the area or being blasted away by the Christian stations in the south part of the county. On the line with us are Stacy and Orly Jones, whose four children, count them, four children are currently in the clutches of what? How many foster parents have they gone through now?
My boys have been in two different foster homes in the 5 month period that they've had them, and my girls have been at the same place. My 3-year-old daughter, since she's been in this foster care in the past 2 months, she's been occurring all kinds of bruises. She came to a visit here about a month and a half ago with a bite mark on her back. I mean, a perfect bite mark that was really deep, and you know, you could tell she'd been bitten really hard.
Did you get
and
a picture
we,
of that?
We
by
raised
chance?
A question on, you know, what happened. And the lady says, well, I'll have to ask the foster parent. Well, when the foster parent got there, she asked her how she got that bruise on her back, and the foster parent says, oh, she fell down. And I said, no, that's a bite mark. She's been bit. And she says, oh, she bites herself. And it's like, I don't care who you are, man, you cannot bite yourself in the back.
Why, a story for every occasion, huh?
And let it be said that those very same bruises and bites would have been used as evidence in court against the parents.
Sure they would have.
I mean, this makes me sick.
Arlie,
I just want to give the statistics out one more time for all the bleeding hearts out there that are thinking that being a foster parent is doing kids a favor. A kid has a 20% higher chance of dying in foster care and a 40% higher chance of being molested in foster care than if you left them in their own home.
And where are those stats from, Roxanne?
CPS Watch.
And that's actually, some of them are still available on the net. The CPS Watch is kind of as a website is not currently active, right?
Well, I don't know what it is.
Also in the studio with us is Roxanne Acustapache, who is an independent advocate.
I didn't know something about it.
Let me ask you this. You know, it seemed to me that one alternative, and I'm not conversant with child law or CPS law or whatever it would be called, family law, would be to go immediately to write up a writ demanding a writ of protection, or a writ of I guess it's a writ of either a prohibition or a writ of some kind of a writ. You go to a higher court to overrule Judge Yonts.
Don't they need their lawyer for that?
No. Let me put it this way. If you can independently go and file a writ on your own behalf, or get another lawyer to file it if that lawyer is not acting on your behalf. And it seems to me that if you're in a situation where your children are in danger and being abused, this is, of course, the basis for which CPS runs in all the time and grabs kids out of homes, as Roxanne has pointed out. You should have, you know, there might be a similar situation. I would suggest trying to get such a writ immediately, and also writing an account of this to every newspaper in the area. I mean, that would be my naive approach. I know some people talk about the low, you know, diplomacy, behind-the-scenes negotiation. It looks like that approach is not working. What do you think, Roxanne?
Well, I think that anybody who's a newspaper investigator or even a journalist would want the other side of the story, and CPS will lie outright and say that the parents are making it up. They're those kind of people to get their kids back, and their kids are making it up. But it's really interesting. In all CPS's papers on Stacy and Orly, they claim the children never asked to go home and are happy in foster care. However, every time the kids are hurt and complain to the parents and try to get the parents to help them, then the social worker says they're lying. They're just saying that because they want to go home. So you can see documentation isn't worth a spit. They can write absolutely conflicting documentations, and the judge will buy it. What sounds good in one situation, the opposite may be said in another.
Right, but putting the issue out there is important to do, as we are doing now on the radio, and doing so also puts you in touch with other people who've had similar experiences with CPS and had their kids taken away or threatened with being taken away. That would be my thought.
Well, I agree not to let them do anything in silence. The thing that really bothers me about CPS is now they're going to want to protect their rear end. They're going to want to protect their liability. So they have a stake in hanging on to those kids and not letting the story come out. So we really have to fight hard.
Well, I'm going to do everything I can to make it come out because...
Susan Mariello, you better grab your fanny.
Yeah, I've protected these children. Their mother walked out on them when they were 2, 4, and 6 years old. I raised those kids for 2 years by myself without moving anybody in with me to help me. I went to work 40 hours a week. You know, I in the past 7 years since my divorce, I've probably drawn less checks than that from any state help. You know, I've always been a working person. Sometimes, you know, my back will bother me. I'll get out of that job and I'll have to, you know, find another one, but that happens. But, you know, I've not drawn very much state help. I've always provided for these children. I've always kept daycare, you know, and daycare providers and people for them. You know, and then me and Stacy got together. We've been together for 5 years, you know, and what really gets me is that they're trying to explain me now as being a violent person. But
Stacy, is this a violent person?
The day that I found out that that man choked my children, I was forced to watch my children go back into his custody, and I had to walk past him. You know what? That took a lot for me to do. But, you know, I can control my anger. If anything, that should have showed them there because, you know, a violent person would have grabbed that man and choked him and would have beat him up, you know.
And that's another thing. Stacy and Orly don't know if they're being treated this way to be provoked into anger. They don't even know what their own feelings are anymore because, like he said, he shouldn't have had to watch his child go back into a home where he had been choked. So they don't know. Every time something happens like this crazy counselor asking about her sex life, you know, she wants to just stand up and say, just shut your face. Get away from me. But she doesn't know. Is that going to be held against her? Or is, in fact, it going to be held against her that she's inappropriate, that she's a doormat and lets people talk to her any way they want? They don't even know how to act anymore. I mean, either it seems like whatever they do is going to be held against them. And I would like to say that I do think the political correctness of Santa Cruz and the liberal progressive, which actually means Nazi fascist, people that work for government I've thought this for a while, and I don't mean to embarrass you, Orly and Stacy, because I've never said this to your face, but Orly and Stacy to me are kind of like a 50s couple. Orly goes out and works. Stacy adores him. Stacy stays home. He speaks his mind. He's kind of a big guy that talks loud, has a lot of opinions. A lot of them I disagree with, but he's entitled to them, you know? And I feel like with CPS, Orly's not even entitled to have opinions, or with the counselors. If they don't like his opinions, then he deserves not to have children. It's crazy. It's like there's no room for anything but the politically correct, groovy Santa Cruz guy.
We're talking to Stacy and Orly Jones. Also on the line with us is Roxanne Acosta-Pache. If you're trying to call in, you're getting a busy signal because we only have one line. But if you want to email in, you can. And the email address is rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, at hotmail.com. Again, rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, at hotmail, one word, small letters, hotmail, hotmail.com.
There's not a two after it anymore?
No two after it, no. But so if you want to to get in touch that way, we can pose questions to Roxanne, to Stacy and Orly, or comments, if you have some comments, rnorris@hotmail.com. We have about 20 minutes left on this particular segment. Roxanne has got to go at 11:30. How are you doing for time yourselves, Stacy and Orly?
Oh, we're fine.
You know, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like we pretty much covered the immediate problems that you're having. Do you think we should just open up the phone lines, or do you guys want to stay on?
Oh, if we can get some feedback, man, you know, that's what I need, is somebody to give me some feedback and tell me, you know, some ways to help me here. They can also write us, me and Stacy Jones at 115 Coral Street, or they're welcome to call us at 724-7815. Anything that would help us, man, I'd sure appreciate it. You know?
And Orly, sometimes the nuts come out of the woodwork here, so you will run past me before you get involved with people, right?
Yeah.
Okay, don't... be careful.
The other question I have...